It's great to be up here. You know, I have to be honest though. As I first read this passage a couple weeks ago, okay, I read it through, and after reading it, I mean, it's five verses, and I was saying to myself, "Man, is there really much there? Okay, what does God really want me to talk about, and what does He want people to walk away with?" And so I kind of had to put it aside and come back to it. And a lot of times that's how God's word works. I mean, we read it through and we think, "Oh, well, okay, I read it." But it's not until we meditate on it. It's not until we allow it to soak in to our minds and to our hearts that we really are able to unearth the truth that God has for each and every one of us. And that's kind of what I feel like this passage does. And so as we read through it this morning, as you look at it, try not to just see this at face value, but really let it soak in. Let the words resonate in your minds and in your hearts, and ask God, "Okay, God, what do you want me to take away from the truth of your word this morning?" As we begin, I just want to paint a little picture of kind of my life in church and kind of high school and college and kind of my mindset, not necessarily what the church was, but at least my mindset of church. For me, church was, it was highly institutional in my mind. It was like something I went to because I had to go because my dad's like the pastor and stuff, and he's going to preach messages, and so I need to be there in the front row and act like I'm paying attention. And so it was this thing I did, and it was a lot of rules and a lot of regulations and rituals and just this organization that, you know, my dad worked for and, you know, helped put food on the table, and that was it. I mean, that's not what the church was, but that's how I perceived it. It wasn't, in my mind, it wasn't a loving community of Jesus followers who were all on the same mission to love God, to love each other, and to be a part of His transforming the world. I didn't see that in high school and even in college. Even going away to college, it's like, okay, I'm going to a Christian university, so I guess I should go to church, right? And do the organization thing and check it off my list as something I did. It wasn't necessarily who I was. Church wasn't something I was a part of. It was just something I did. And I title this, "Church, It's Not What You Think." Because for a lot of us, that's what we think, right? We come to church and we do things, right? We sing songs and we put money in this offering plate that comes around. And then we listen to some guy talk for like 40 minutes. And then we go out and we go to, you know, a park cafe and we get coffee. And it's all this stuff that we do. It isn't that. Okay, just to be clear, that is not church. Church is you. Church is me. It is a community, again, of loving Jesus followers who are out on a mission to be a part of God's mission to transform the world. And as Jesus showed up in the first century, he butted heads with this institution that I just described. This institutional religion that was about rules and about authority and about ritual and was highly judgmental. And then Jesus walks in and he looks around at those who are following God, and he started to introduce them to a loving God that was not about judgment. And that was new to them. They're like, "No, I don't think I've ever heard that before. I've heard these Old Testament stories about how you sacrifice and you sprinkle blood, and I know I go to the temple because I'm supposed to, and I put money in this bowl thing because I'm supposed to. I've never heard about this loving God. That's all new to me." And that's what Jesus came to introduce. He came to dispel the myth of religion and introduce people to the relational side of church. And his coming to earth was an embodiment of that. He modeled that, right? As he arrived on the scene and he chose 12 guys, his followers, his disciples, to come alongside and to journey with him. And then he even out of the 12 chose 3 to cultivate a close relationship with. And then on the eve of his crucifixion, right, he goes up into the upper room to impart some wisdom and to serve them by washing their feet. But really, I think he also went there to enlist their support, right? It's like, guys, I'm about to go to the cross. I wish I could share everything that's about to happen with you, but just know that I'm about to be betrayed and mocked and spit on and put on trial and found guilty and tortured and crucified on a cross. And so he shared that. He didn't share specifics about that with them, but he's up there in the upper room and sharing with them some last thoughts on relationships and serving. And then they're on their way, as Matt shared last week, they're on their way now to the garden. He's still talking with them. And in the upper room, he shared with them, he said, guys, I'm about to leave you. Right now, just put yourself in their shoes for a second. Okay, the disciples. You've been spending 24/7 with Jesus now for 3+ years. You've given up family, jobs, social status, whatever. You left it all to follow Jesus, and you've been walking around and listening to him teach and perform miracles and interact with religious leaders. You've kind of been riding his coattails. And now Jesus sits there and says, I'm leaving. Oh, and by the way, where I'm going, you can't follow me. And their reaction, one reaction was, well, you can't tell me that, right? I'm coming with you. But I'm sure for the majority of them or all of them, that was the beginning of some stress in their life, some fear, some inhibition, saying, okay, now what? I mean, for 3 years, we've been wrapped up in Jesus, and now he's leaving. Now what do we do? How do we move forward? How do we move on? And so here in John 15, he introduces three key relationships that he needed them to manage and to cultivate and to grow so that they could continue to spread the message that he came to proclaim. And Matt talked about that first relational aspect last week as he talked about the need to abide in Christ, right? That word abide, it's used, depending on your translation, it's used 10 times in the first 11 verses, right? Abide, 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 to remain, to stay in place, to be connected to the source of life, Christ and our Heavenly Father. So Matt unpacked that whole relational aspect and the need to cultivate that as our first and foremost priority. And today we're going to look at the second relational aspect, and that is our relationship with each other. How are we supposed to interact? What are we supposed to be about? How are you supposed to treat those sitting next to you this morning, those behind you, those in front of you? What do we do? And then he ends John 15 with the third relational aspect of how we are to relate to the world around us. But this morning we're going to talk specifically about our relationships with each other. If you have your Bibles, turn to John 15. If you don't have one, there should be one there in the rack in front of you. John 15, starting in verse 12, Jesus just lays it out, right? He's just come off of talking about your need to abide in Christ. And he says, and this is my commandment. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Now, they just heard this. This wasn't new. They heard this a few hours earlier in the upper room. John 13, 34, Jesus says the exact same thing. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. So they've heard this just a few hours earlier. So they're probably thinking, oh, I guess that's important. I guess I should actually do that, because he's saying it again. And he uses the word command, not suggestion. It wasn't like Jesus saying, hey, it'd be a good idea if you guys thought about loving each other. No, he commanded them. And the disciples, they weren't very good at this loving one another thing. Okay, if you know anything about the disciples, I mean, as they wandered around, as they spent time with Jesus, there were times when they're walking down the road and they would get in fights with each other. about who should be sitting next to Jesus in heaven, about who's the greatest among them, about who Jesus likes more. So they didn't always get along. And now Jesus is saying, hey, Matthew, I need you to love John. And John, I need you to love Peter. And I'm sure that they get there. Matthew's like, there's no way I'm loving John. And John's like, yeah, and I ain't loving Peter. Okay? But Jesus says, no, I command you to love one another as I have loved you. And that word love, that is a complex word. It's probably more complex than we make it out to be because we throw it around so much, right? If I was to ask, I don't know, 100 of you to try to give me, you know, what love means or what love is about, I'd probably get 90 different answers to that. Okay, because we throw around. It's like, I love In-N-Out, and I love the Giants, and I love, you know, the 49ers, and I love, Adam's Peanut Butter Fudge Ripple Cheesecake, and I love, that's a hint. And I love, I love my spouse. I mean, I just love stuff, whatever, you fill in the blank. But we like to throw that term around. So what is Jesus talking about when he says you are to love one another? He answers that in verse 13. And he takes it to a supernatural extreme that I'm sure just floored the disciples. It says, greater love. You want to love? Here you go. Greater love has no one than this, than someone lay down his life for his friends. So now Matthew's like, now wait a minute, Jesus. You mean I don't just have to love John? I've got to die for him? I've got to die for the guy? Really? That's what you're saying? Yeah, that's what Jesus is saying. Lay down your life for your friends. And Jesus is about to model that for them. Right? He's on his way to the cross. He is about to lay down his life, not just for his friends, but for all of humanity. And I wonder if after the cross, this commandment clicked in for them. Like the light bulb went on. It's like, oh, that's what Jesus was talking about. That's the extreme love that we are to have for one another. A supernatural, heavenly type of love that allowed Jesus to go to the cross. Now, we are in church, okay? So let's be honest. How many of you would be willing to die for the person sitting next to you this morning? Okay, you're like, yeah, I see some hands, I see some elbows. It's like, yeah, you need to raise your hand. Okay, yeah, you're dying for me, right? That's tough. That is like extreme love. What does that look like? Lay down my life for my friends. Well, apart from, you know, death and laying down your life, there are other aspects of laying down our life for someone. And I just want to look back at Jesus and kind of how he lived his life. Because he didn't just lay down his life when he went to the cross. He laid down his life each and every day. Really, if we think about it. In John 3, he had a conversation with Nicodemus, right? A religious leader. And he incredible patience, right? He's trying to explain to Nicodemus about being born again. And Nicodemus is like, well, wait a minute, born again, what are you talking? I mean, I can't go back into my mother's womb. Well, I don't get, how does that work? And Jesus is probably driving him nuts. It's like, no, that's not what I mean. Okay, so he's trying to explain. He's loving Nicodemus as he's showing incredible, incredible patience. And then in the next chapter, Jesus just throws caution to the wind as he walks up to a Samaritan and begins to interact. And Jews just didn't do that. They just didn't walk up to a Samaritan. That was against Jewish law to go up and talk to a Samaritan. And this wasn't just a Samaritan. This was a Samaritan woman. So in one fell swoop, Jesus breaks two Jewish laws. But he is showing incredible tolerance and saying, you know what? It is not about rules, and it is not about rituals and regulations and what you know, what the law says. It is about people. It's about love. And that's what I'm here to share. Love is patience and love is tolerance. And throughout the book of John, as we've been looking at it, he has showed a ton of compassion to the weak and to the outcast. And then in the upper room, as he takes off his tunic and he throws a towel over his shoulder and he washes his disciples' feet, showing love to them, displaying servanthood, saying, this is what I'm talking about. When I say love each other, it's throwing caution to the wind, and it is putting aside your personal preferences, your desires, your thoughts, and your feelings, and what you want for the sake of the person next to you. Because that's what it means to love one another, and to lay down our lives means we have to die to some stuff. And our time and our talent and our treasure is not ours. But it's God's time and it's God's talent and it's God's treasure that he's given to us. And now we need to use that as we love others. Then he goes on, verse 14. Says, and you are my friends if you do what I command you. Okay, I want to stop with that short sentence because that's a huge statement that a lot of us just kind of glance over, right? Okay, you want to know? You ever wonder if you're following me? You ever wonder if you're a follower of Jesus? He pretty much says it right there. You are my friends if you do what I command you. Are you obeying me? Love equals obedience. If we love, if we really love, we obey. And then he goes on, he says, and no longer do I call you servants. For the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. No longer do I call you servants, for I have called you friends. Can I understand this was a culture that was all about debtedness. That was their world, okay? For those that followed God, for those that were Jews, it was all about being in debt to God. It goes all the way back to the garden at Adam and Eve. Ever since then, they've been in debt to God. That's why you had all the sacrifices and all the blood sprinkling and everything, all the rituals and everything they had to do and go to the temple and priests and all this stuff. It was so they could be right with God. It was trying to pay a debt that they could not possibly pay. They were slaves to God. That's what they felt in their humanness, that they were in debt. And slavery in that time also, it was a different maybe definition of slavery than we think of today when we think of slavery. Our mind goes one way. But here, at least in first century, it was more indentured servitude. Okay, you were a slave to someone or you were a servant to someone if you owed them something. Right? If you owed somebody something, you couldn't pay them off, you became their servant, you became their slave for a period of time. Eventually that would end because you would pay off your debt. But spiritually speaking, for the Jews, they felt like they could never pay off that debt to God. And then Jesus comes along and says, guys, that's why I'm here. I'm here to pay that debt that you can't pay. So now you are no longer slaves to God. Did you hear that? You are no longer slaves, and now I can call you friends. I can call you friends. And all that I've heard from my Father, I'm relaying to you. And that is so different from a master-slave relationship, right? A master, if he's got a slave or a servant, basically goes up to him and says, all right, hey, today I need you to clean the bathroom. Go clean the bathroom, and then they walk away, right? The master leaves, and hopefully the servant goes and cleans the bathroom. That's a master-servant relationship. Jesus says, that's not how it is, okay? Now, I'm still going to need you to clean the bathroom, but let's walk in there, and let me tell you why I need you to do this for me. Because we have some weary travelers that are coming over, and they're going to be staying the night, and I just want to provide them with the most accommodating, comfortable, inviting atmosphere I can. Would you help me with that? Okay, I got some other stuff I'm going to take care of. If you focus on that, okay, that'd be awesome. That's what God's talking about, that we're now friends. He's let us in on God's plan. We now have an unobstructed access to the mind and the heart and the vision that God has. It's unobstructed. We get to be a part of his plan. Then he goes on in verse 16. It says, and you did not choose me, but I chose you. Right? Again, talking to his disciples, right? So I'm sure he's looking at him again. He's saying, okay, Matthew, remember? I chose you, right? Remember, I got off the boat and I'm walking down. I see you at the tax collector booth. What did I say? Follow me. Right? James, John, remember you were fishing. I said, put down your nets and follow me, right? I chose you. I sought you out. I need you to come with me on a mission, on God's mission, to redeem mankind. He says, and I appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. He goes right back to that abide. Okay, because he understands that that's the foundation. The foundation for everything you're going to accomplish as my disciples starts there. It starts with you abiding in me and my Heavenly Father and staying connected and getting power and comfort from. And then he begins this passage the same way he started it. Verse 17, these things I command you, so that you will love one another. Hopefully by now they've gotten it, right? I mean, they heard it again. It's like, okay, I heard it a couple hours ago. I heard it at the beginning of these five verses. Now I'm hearing it again. Okay, love, we get it. We get it, Jesus. You are calling us to love one another. And the key thing to understand is that was so different than what they were used to. Being a loving community was not something that they were used to, both in their little, you know, crowd of 12 or 11, okay, at this point. But and also just religion in general was not about love. It was about laws and keeping all 613 laws that were out there, right? Even Jesus, it's funny, Jesus at one point in John 4, he heals a lame man. He'd been lame for 38 some odd years. And Jesus heals him on the Sabbath, which you're not supposed to do. And then he gets him up and tells him to take his mat and walk, which you're not supposed to carry your mat. That's what Jesus was all about. He was all about putting aside law for love. And that's what he's stressing here in these five verses. So what do we do with that? Okay, again, as you read those five verses, you may read them and you're like, okay, I'm supposed to love one another, and I'm now a friend of God, and I'm supposed to at some point maybe lay down my life for somebody. And he's appointed me to, you know, help him, and I'm supposed to abide. What does that look like? Practically speaking, what does that look like? Well, I wanna share a story. Actually, read a story. A couple years ago, actually, probably 20 years ago. Okay, now it seems like yesterday, but 20 years ago, I attended a conference back in Atlanta and heard this guy named Tim Sanders speak. At that time, Tim was the chief solutions officer at Yahoo. Here's a cool title, the chief solutions officer, right? Like I go around solving problems or finding solutions. But anyway, that was his whole job at Yahoo, was the chief solutions officer. But not only that, he was also known around the industry, around Yahoo and around, you know, the business world as just a love cat, for lack of a better term. That's why he called himself, I'm a love cat. He was all about love. And he'd go around speaking to executives and businesses and conferences on this whole topic of winning people by loving them. And I don't know, I mean, I got to go up and interact with him a little bit after, and I don't know necessarily whether or not he's a follower of Jesus. But in terms of this whole concept of love, he gets it. And he shared in the book and actually live as well, he shared this story about Mike. Okay, he calls it the Mr. Mike story, and I just want to read it for you. Because I think it paints an incredible picture of what Jesus is asking us to do as we love one another. And this is a story about the president or the former president of Pizza Hut. Okay, Pizza Hut. His name's Mike. Here's what Mike used to do. Every Friday with his lunch hour, this is what Mike would do. He would pick up the phone and he would call two of his most valuable customers to thank them for their business. And he would find out the name of these most valuable customers by getting sales data from the company's customer center, which would tell him who's buying the most pizza. Right? So president of Pizza Hut, every Friday during his lunch hour, he'd call customers and say, okay, who bought the most pizza this month? And then he'd call them to thank them for their business. So a while back, he relays this story. He tells this story about a woman he had recently called. This MVC, most valuable customer, lived in a very poor neighborhood in South Dallas and ordered more than a dozen large pizzas every month for a year. Yeah, that's like a pizza every 50 hours or something, right? I mean, that's a lot of pizza. Mike had to call her 10 times before he reached her because nobody ever answered the phone. But when he finally got her, he said, hi, I'm the president of Pizza Hut. Okay, there's a fun phone call. President of Pizza Hut's calling me. The woman didn't believe him at first, but after he was able to convince her of his identity, he mentioned that he knew that she had purchased all this pizza. And he says, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for your business, and I'd like to know if we're taking good care of you. The woman replies, my kids love your pizza, she said, and you guys do a wonderful job. Now, it doesn't end there. It keeps going. I'm gonna finish reading. But for many of us, that's where conversations tend to end, right? Okay, we walk around here on campus on a Sunday morning, and invariably, okay, I hear this, I don't know, 300 times a Sunday morning, I hear this. Okay, what you usually ask somebody when you see them? Greeting. Hi, yes, hi, and how are you? Okay, and what's the standard answer to that? Fine. See, we're good. We're good Christians, right? We're good. We're all going to heaven. We know how to ask how you are and if you're fine, okay? But that's it. That's what we say. How are you? And we keep walking, and you hear fine kind of in the background. Fine, 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 right, as you walk away. And that's it. And that's kind of what Mike did at the beginning of this conversation. It's kind of like, hey, thanks for buying pizza, putting money in my pocket. Hope you're happy. He didn't, though. He kept going. The story goes on. It says, because he is a compassionate man, instead of getting off the phone, he continued talking to her. Tell me more, he said. And then he asked this question. What is your story? What is your story? I mean, that's a risk, right? I mean, it's your lunch hour. You got stuff to do. And you're going to ask a lady on the phone what her story is? All right, well, here we go. Mr. Mike, she said, I don't have much of a life. She went on to explain that she was divorced with 5 children between the ages of 3 and 11, and that she worked 3 jobs to support them. In the morning, she's a maid at a hotel. In the evening, a waitress at a Greasy Spoon. And on weekends, she cleans houses. Her kids are angry with her because they seldom get to see her. And although they live in a bad neighborhood, she wanted them to grow up with a strong work ethic. And she didn't want her kids to see their mother accept public assistance. So she worked nonstop. My kids really love pizza, she said. So she lets the eldest order pizza whenever the others wanted it. And that's why they'd been eating so much pizza. Her words touched Mike's heart. Mammy said, I want to thank you for something entirely different than being a good customer. I want to thank you for being a good mother. He then asked her the last time anybody had told her she was a good mother. She replied that outside of her kids, no one had ever done so. Then she began to cry. "Mr. Mike," she said, "thank you. For the rest of my life, I will tell the story about how an important executive called and told me that I was a good mother." For her, when Mike asked her what her story was, her identity, at least in her mind, was jobs and, you know, putting forth a good work ethic and working hard and, you know, making sure kids were provided for. That was her identity for her. And then Mike comes along and says, "No, no, 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 that is not who you are. You are not just a mom who works hard. You are a good mom, maybe who happens to work hard, but you are first and foremost a good mother." Now for us, as we leave, or as we would ask that question, what is your story? What would you share? Where is your identity? Is your identity in what you do, your job, your title, what kind of car you drive, where you live, how many kids you have, your family, married, single? I mean, is that your identity? Is that your story? Because let me tell you, that's not your story. That's not your identity. Your identity is as a child of God. That's who you are. And to love each other is to constantly remind those that we see every single Sunday that they are children of God. So what do we do with that? What do we do with this passage? What do we do with what I've just shared? Well, I'll tell you what you do. When you leave here this morning, you don't ask, "How are you?" So that you can simply hear, "Fine." I would encourage you, challenge you to ask deeper questions, to really seek out someone's story. How is God working in your life? Have you seen God show up this week? How can I pray for you? What's going on? Because that's how we love one another. That is what God is calling us to do when he makes a commandment to love one another, because it's not superficial love. It's the kind of love that says, are you willing to lay down your life? Meaning, are you willing to give up time, talent, treasure? Are you willing to take the time to hear what I have to say? Which is going to require us to ask the deeper question of what's your story and what's going on. It was interesting. I shared this in the first service, and you should have heard the conversations after. Okay, as I'm walking along and talking, someone immediately there. "Hi, Doug. How? Oh, I can't ask that. Oh, what's your story?" I mean, it's funny. I mean, they didn't know what to do, right? Because it's ingrained in us to say, "How are you doing?" And then just kind of keep on going. So they say, "Fine." And so with this guy, buddy, people, they didn't know what to do. It made people feel a little uncomfortable knowing that this is what it means to love. I believe we do a great job of loving one another. I really believe that. I mean, I've worked in several churches now, okay, grow up in the church. And I do want to encourage you, saying that Crosspoint is a loving church. It is a loving place. We do love each other. But can we do better? Of course we can. Okay, so that's the challenge. Encouragement is we're loving. The challenge is, okay, let's love more. Let's love more. And as we love, okay, I want to go back to the second part of what Jesus of Jesus' commandment. Okay, it's in John 13, where he says love one another. Because the second part is huge for our church. And that's where he says people will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Do we really want to reach out here in our community? I mean, Matt talked about that last week. Okay. Do we really want to reach? It starts with us being connected with God. It continues with a foundation of love among us, because then the world's going to look in here and they're going to say, I want some of that. I want to be a part of that. Because let's be honest, the world is not interested in rules. They got enough rules. They're not interested in regulations. They're not interested in things they have to do to be a part of the church. They just want to know, do we care? And do we love? And if we're not loving each other, I don't know how they could possibly think that that's what we're about, or that we could ever love them. And so that's where Jesus then goes into that last part of John 15, saying, hey, we need to love a world. A world that is about selfish desires and greed and envy and deceit and me first, and it's all about me, and what do I need to do to get ahead? Who do I step on along the way? And we are to be the opposite of that and showing love to one another. I'm going to invite the band to come back up. And I want us to celebrate as we close this morning. We did a lot of reflecting earlier with communion, but now, guys, it's time to celebrate. Right? It's time to celebrate the fact that we have a God that loves us, okay, that we are no longer a slave to, that we are friends of, that has chosen us, that he has appointed us to join him in his mission. Okay, let's celebrate that. Let's be excited about that. Are we excited about that? Really? That's it? That's all we got? Okay, yeah. Hey, we can clap in church. It's okay. We can clap. Our identity is not in solemnness. Okay? We can clap. Okay? But yeah, we're going to celebrate. So Mike's here, and he's going to lead us in some celebration as we close this morning.